You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line are Catherine Dill and Will Duffield, who were arrested on August 20th for selling lemonade on the Capitol lawn. Catherine and Will, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start from the beginning. How was it that you guys decided to sell lemonade on the Capitol lawn? I guess knowing that it was something that wasn't allowed.
Well, in my case, throughout the summer, I saw children having their lemonade stands shut down across the country. In my native Philadelphia, and Alex's lemonade stand was shut down. And this upset me. I thought this was ridiculous. I saw that some people were organizing lemonade stands across the country, and I saw one on the Capitol lawn. I figured that was a good place. I knew some of the people involved there. So I went down to join them.
Catherine, how about you?
Pretty much the same thing for me. The case that primarily upset me was the one in Georgia, because there were just a few girls that were setting up a lemonade stand on their own front yard, and then the police basically shut it down. So how we came about wanting to sell it on the Capitol was we felt if the police are going to come on to people's property and shut down their lemonade stands, we were going to take it to them and set up a lemonade stand right in front of the Capitol.
Cool.
And just expose how ridiculous it looks when someone is telling you to shut down a lemonade stand.
So you did know that it was illegal to do that, or you didn't know that?
No, I mean, we assumed, I'm sure, that it's not legal. But as far as, like, if we thought we were going to get arrested or anything like that, I literally had no idea what was going to happen, because sometimes things like this can go so different. I mean, I didn't know if maybe nothing would happen. Like, they thought perhaps it would be best just to let us continue, or if they were going to give us a ticket, or if they were going to simply shut it down, or if they were going to arrest us. I mean, we really had no idea, because none of us had done anything like this before.
Mm-hmm. I believe that the act of vending itself wasn't allowed. However, because that's what we were protesting, I saw it as more an act of protest and therefore a First Amendment issue than the actual vending laws themselves.
And of course, we were unable to be joined by a third person, Meg McLean, and she was also involved in this matter, and she's involved in, I guess, the legal action against you all, right?
Yes. It was Meg, Will, and I who were arrested.
Right. So you didn't know for sure if there was some specific law against it, but you did it for the purposes of demonstrating how ridiculous it was. And of course, myself growing up in the United States, I sold a lot of lemonade. And yeah, it is something pretty ridiculous. So I could see what motivated you to do that. This was the first time you said you had done anything like this before, right, Catherine?
I mean, I'd done certain protests, but just sort of, we didn't know how it would work out since it was a lemonade stand. Like, we didn't know if once cops arrived, if there would still be customers, or if they would get scared off, which they turned out to completely defy the police and purchase lemonade from us anyway. We weren't exactly not expecting or expecting that. We just didn't really know how it was going to go.
Do you consider yourself activists?
Yes. I've been to a protest or two.
Okay.
I suppose I would, yes. I went to the dance at the Jefferson Memorial, and in my own life, I'll write and talk out if I see something that I believe is wrong. So, yeah.
That's a pretty American thing to do. The reason I asked was because I'm seeing a website here where you are dancing at the Jefferson Memorial. I guess that's illegal to dance there, because you can walk or run, but you can't dance.
Yes.
Yeah,
so, actually, after several incidents in which people were either arrested for dancing or forced out, on the 4th of July, a few of us danced there, and the police came, but they took no action against us. So maybe we've managed to change something in that case.
Perhaps, yeah, that would be great. Now, you're from the Philadelphia area, you said. Well, Catherine, what about you? Where were you born and raised?
I was raised in Dallas, Texas.
And how about Meg?
I think she grew up in Oregon, Washington. No, I think it was Oregon.
Oregon? Okay.
Yeah, near Portland.
She grew up in Portland, Oregon, and then she moved to New Hampshire.
And how are you all connected with this?
There's actually a really strong community of, like, liberty activists online. It's almost like a very small world. I mean, like, I know various liberty activists from all across the country. It's very easy for us to identify a problem and be able to organize groups in order to solve whatever problem we see going on in whatever area.
Originally, I saw the video of Adam Kokesh being thrown to the ground at the Jefferson Memorial, and I went down the next weekend to support the dancers, and there I met a few activists and sort of became friends with them, and through them I heard about this action.
Okay, so you guys weren't friends before this, really?
No, I had actually never met Will. I don't think I'd ever formally met Meg until this either.
Okay, great.
Until this particular event. I mean, we had met like the night before and stuff, but this whole situation brought us together.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay. There you are. You're on the Capitol lawn. You are selling lemonade for, what was it, a dime a cup?
Yeah, 10 cents.
And we did not want to give it away because I don't think it is a crime to actually give away lemonade, which, I mean, to me, that sort of defeats the purpose of someone needing a permit for lemonade because they say that it's for safety reasons.
Right.
So I guess it's okay to give away lemonade laced with cyanide, but it's not okay to sell lemonade laced with cyanide.
And that's something that I plan on bringing up in court because we actually have on video an officer telling us that we're allowed to give it away but not to sell it. And I think that's absurd. One should always be allowed to ask for compensation for their services.
Right.
When the officer said that, we made sure to verify no, because whenever the customers came up after he said, you can give it away, just don't sell it, we said the cost is 10 cents because we were protesting the fact that you're not allowed to sell lemonade, not the fact that you are allowed to give it away. I mean, we were protesting something very specific, so we made sure to know that no, we actually do have a cost, and it's 10 cents.
Right. So how long were you out there for before you were approached by, I guess, was it the Capitol Police?
Yes, we were out there for probably 20 minutes before we were originally approached, I think.
20 minutes, you said?
Around there, yes.
Okay. Catherine, I didn't hear what you said. Was that what you were saying?
No, I think it was more like 5 minutes.
So somewhere between 5 and 20 minutes, you were out there for a short period of time, and sometimes time tends to fly by when things like this are happening.
When you're selling lemonade.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
How many customers did you have?
A ton.
Really?
It was a hot day.
That's something that I don't think that we were expecting to go so well. We weren't expecting to have so many customers, and that was awesome.
Mm.
And then it was also awesome that they were not intimidated once the police officers showed up.
Even when they sort of attempted to block people from buying lemonade, then we would go and deliver it to them.
They actually formed a barricade around us, and so we shouted out to the people surrounding the barricade around us, we're doing deliveries now, so raise your hand if you want a cup. And then we would walk around the police officers and deliver the lemonade.
That's great. How many police officers were there?
About 10 by the end.
How long did the whole incident occur for?
About 40 minutes.
Started at about noon.
Right.
And finally put in the van a bit after 12:40.
Yeah.
So they surround you. You're still going around trying to deliver the lemonade. The customers or potential customers are wanting to buy the lemonade.
We were adapting to market conditions.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. What happened after that? They line up around you to block people from getting to you. And I guess finally one of them or a couple of them had had enough and they decided to take you into custody. Is that what happened?
Yeah, they asked us who we were and all of that and let us continue selling for a bit as they wrote tickets. And then finally they moved in and we were cuffed and had all of our stuff confiscated.
Actually, the moment before we were arrested, we had actually run out of lemonade, and I was in the middle of making my very last delivery. We were literally about to completely shut down the lemonade stand and consider it a success, like, hey, we were able to sell lemonade on the U.S. Capitol, and we didn't even get arrested. But when I was in the middle of making my last delivery, because we had literally run out of lemonade because we had so many customers, that's actually when I was stopped by the police officer, and we were arrested. So we were arrested right before we were going to shut down anyway.
Wow. Were they regular handcuffs or were they those plastic tie handcuffs?
It switched off a couple times. Originally it was the plastic ties and then we got the regular one.
Great. So they arrested you right there on the Capitol lawn.
Yep.
Then what happened? They took you to the vehicles, you said?
Yeah, we were taken to a van, and from there, we were taken back to the police station. We were processed and sort of questioned for about 4 or 5 hours.
And this entire time, we were each in separate rooms, literally chained to a wall.
Yeah, we had a little bench, and then beyond that, we were just cuffed to a wall.
Mm. So 4 or 5 hours interrogation over selling 10-cent lemonade. Did they think you were terrorists?
They kept asking us who our leader is.
Treated us as a far more organized group than I believe we were.
Yeah, it was actually something rather organic, but they kept saying, like, who's your leader? What group is this? Blah, blah, blah. It was very strange. There's like some headquarters with this guy making all these plans of lemonade protests in some cave somewhere. It was very weird, the questions they were asking us.
The cave's already been used for Osama
bin
Laden.
I guess a hollowed out tree. A hollowed out tree.
Something, but a guy in a big lemon suit, like a Halloween type lemon costume. Sorry, Will, go ahead.
I was going to say that there was a disconnect. They didn't seem to understand that this kind of thing could just happen. They believed that it had to have some sort of formal structure or leadership and organization. We had to be told what to do. And it was very interesting, the sort of bureaucratic notions that they had, that they believed that we as activists conformed to when we didn't.
How did they treat you when they had you handcuffed to the wall and were trying to find out where the Great Lemon was?
Originally, when we were first arrested and first put into the van and arrived at the police station, they were very rude and very disrespectful. The officers were like laughing and mocking us, telling us like, oh, you have just ruined your life and we'll arrest people like you all day long. I do this for fun. We didn't know how long we were going to be in this van because, I mean, it was very hot. My face was matted to my head. My hands were behind my back. If I had a scratch, the bug went on my head. I couldn't even scratch my head. I literally had no idea how long I was going to be locked in this van, and they wouldn't really give me any time estimations. And then when I went in to get processed initially, just to be taken into the back room where they questioned me, I was patted down, and the woman patting me down was just very rude and disrespectful. But I think after a couple of hours, the police station had gotten a few calls demanding our release. And after that, I did notice a change that they started treating us nicer because I think that they could tell this might be sort of a public matter.
Public relations disaster.
Yeah. And so after that, I actually saw an almost immediate change when they realized that this might be discussed in a public manner.
Right. Will, how about you?
I spoke with the officers. I tried to be cordial and such. And in the beginning, they were pretty gruff. But especially with the guy who's interrogating me, the more I just spoke with him about hobbies, shooting, things like that, I think I sort of humanized myself. And he realized that I wasn't some terrorist and was simply a kid standing up for what he believed in. So I found that pretty interesting, just through conversation. I don't know how much the phone calls had to do with it. Probably some, definitely. But in my personal experience, I believe it helped. It was interesting to see that change, him realizing that I was another person.
It's pretty amazing that they seem to all follow the same script no matter where they are. You know, they got the short haircuts. I don't know about these Capitol cops, but cops throughout the country have these short Marine-type haircuts and they act very tough, like they're dealing with, and I said it before, terrorists. I haven't seen any terrorists, but they seem to think they're all over the place. But they didn't physically hurt you all or anything, right?
I was not,
No, I was not physically hurt. I was asking them to loosen my cuffs because they were scraping into my skin, and they refused to do that. But other than that, that's the only sort of physical discomfort that I really experienced. Just the physical discomfort of being stuck in the same position for 5 hours.
Yeah, and how about Meg?
While being chained to a wall.
Yeah, right. Oh, God. How about Meg? Did you hear about how she was treated?
She had the same woman process her that processed me initially. So I remember she and I talking afterwards that the woman was just very rude to both of us. I've never been arrested before, so I don't know the protocol or what normally goes on. I was asked to take off my grandmother's ring that I really had not taken off since I was like 10 years old. And I was just asking her, can I please just keep this ring on? I don't really understand why I'm being asked to take this off. I'm not going to hurt anyone. And she just thought that was the most outrageous question she'd ever heard and was like, are you kidding me? Are you joking right now? No, you can't keep it on. And she just basically treated me like I was a terrorist or something.
There's certainly protocol involved. The guy was interrogating me. I asked him why he wasn't carrying his gun anymore because I noticed that he didn't have it in his holster, and he was saying, well, it's in case you were to overpower me and take it. That seems a bit ridiculous that I would, while chained to the wall, overpower this guy and take his weapon.
Well, you got to realize how incompetent a lot of these people are. So, yeah, I think it's been done before.
Well, they told me, you know, even though you're chained to the wall, you could overpower me. So it could happen.
Could you imagine if they would have just come up to you and spoken like this, maybe? Hi, how you doing? Welcome. Have you ever been arrested before? No? Okay, let me tell you how it's done here, then. You're going to have to give us your jewelry and this and that. I mean, what would be the difference of them talking like that and talking the way that they did?
I think that's what I was surprised about. It was just very weird how they weren't even treating us like another person. That's what I found very strange.
Will, what were you saying?
Were they to treat people that way, citizens would have a much better view of the police.
Right.
You're right.
It used to be that, especially when people just policed their own communities, your local policeman lived near you, it was much more of a community-centric force, and I think they treated people with a lot more respect because they had to live with them.
Right. I guess you could imagine how these same people would be treating their own children. Would they be treating their own children like that? And how would it hurt them to actually treat people like human beings? They don't seem to get that through their heads, or they're told from their superiors to act like this, which is probably the case. They're probably told to treat people like dirt for whatever reason or reasons, instead of just treating them nice.
Or it becomes ingrained over time, I guess, as you're exposed to a culture where your higher-ups and the people you learn from treat everyone like criminals. I mean, I feel like eventually you might start to do that.
Right, even though we're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, right? That doesn't matter anymore.
Exactly.
Okay, so you finally get out. Did you have to get bailed out?
We were given citations with our first court date on them, stating we would have to return then for that or risk further legal action.
Okay, so you were released without having to post any bail?
Correct.
Okay, and so you got a citation, and Catherine, what does your citation say?
Well, the original ticket that we got from the Capitol Police when we left the station, it said we were charged with unlawful conduct, failure to obey, and vending without a permit. Now, those charges were actually dropped when we went to court on the 4th for failure to provide proper paperwork by the Capitol Police. I don't know if this was a mistake on their part or they just didn't feel like dealing with it, but those charges were actually dropped, and the only charges that remained were the selling goods and services on Capitol Lawn on the federal level. So the local charges are dropped, but now it's the federal charges that we're facing.
Mm-hmm. Will, have you ever been arrested before? I forgot to ask.
I have not. I was detained once after a party that was shut down back in high school, but no actual arrest, never been processed or anything.
Okay. What about Meg? Do you know anything about her?
I believe she has been arrested before.
Maybe she was, like, selling an apple or something.
Yeah, doing something
perhaps
real dangerous.
Something
like
that terrible.
Yeah, perhaps she was doing something equally as terrible as that.
Yes. So they gave you a citation. They said you have to show up at the next date, and that was October 4th, is that right?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. And what happened at that October 4th date?
We all showed up in court. We were to go to two different courtrooms. At the first one, then the vending charge was dropped. In the form for the dropping of the charge, it claimed that the Capitol Police had failed to provide paperwork. Then, going to the second courtroom, we had the selling goods and services charge introduced, and that's when we were given these absurd release conditions that we would have to urinate in cups and undergo a drug test. And as well, even though we have not yet been proven guilty of any crime, we are banned from Capitol Hill, which, in my estimation, is a violation of my First Amendment right to petition the government for grievances, as I can no longer access the offices of my congressional representatives.
Mm-hmm. So here in this article that I'm looking at the Daily Caller, and this is an article from last week, from 1010, it says that three activists arrested for selling 10-cent cups of lemonade on the lawn of the Capitol building in August are facing up to 1 year in jail for their thirst-quenching crimes. You guys pleaded not guilty in Superior Court of the District of Columbia on October 4th to sale of goods on U.S. Capitol grounds, a crime that carries a 180-day maximum prison sentence. The three face an additional 180 days in jail after refusing to submit to a urine test and being held in contempt of court. The urine sample was part of a program to avoid going to trial, but the Lemonistas, it's pretty clever, said it was a violation of their Fourth Amendment rights. They also said it was inappropriate because the accused are supposed to be presumed innocent until proven guilty. Okay, so when did they want you to piss in a cup?
We were first given the option to urinate in a cup as part of a deferment program. We refused that and then they reintroduced this drug test as part of our release conditions. We were supposed to undergo the test before noon the next day. We had 24 hours to do it, or we would be in violation of our release conditions, which we currently are, as none of us underwent the drug test.
Catherine?
Yes, and actually in court, when we were given the release conditions to sign, where our signature is supposed to be, it literally says refuse. We even officially and in a documented way refused these terms of conditions based on the fact that we felt it was a violation of our constitutional rights. And I mean, if I hadn't protested, nothing would have shown up. It's the principle of the fact that I don't like that there's a precedent currently where a person is basically deemed guilty until they're proven innocent, and our charges had absolutely nothing to do with drugs. And the fact that they would just out of nowhere think that they can demand people's bodily fluids is just absurd to me. And we were sitting in the courtroom and we saw people going up in front of us before our case was called up, and it just seemed to be protocol whether the person standing before the judge had a charge against them that had to do with drugs or not. As their condition of release, they were told that they had to submit to drug testing, and everyone before us just kept saying, okay, because we weren't expecting this to happen at all. We just thought that we were going to go there and deal with this whole lemonade issue. We were not expecting this to turn into a Fourth and Fifth Amendment issue. What initially happened was the judge told us our conditions of release, and then we objected, and she got rather angry because I'm sure that she's not used to that sort of thing. And she asked us to go outside and talk with our lawyers, because honestly, none of us really had any idea what was going on. I mean, these three men came up in front of us claiming to be our lawyers. We had never seen them before. So we went in the back and talked to our lawyers, and they sort of explained the whole legal aspect of everything. And we told them we still would like to object to the urine test, and we would like to object to the stay-away order since it's a violation of our First Amendment. We had constitutional reasons behind everything that we were saying. And so when we went back into the courtroom, our court-appointed lawyers basically repeated what we said, and the government prosecutor, in response to that, actually said, given the circumstances, those constitutional concerns are not an issue.
Circumstances?
Like somehow they didn't apply to this situation. Like the right to privacy doesn't actually mean you have a right to privacy. Or we must be interpreting it wrong.
Good for you for standing up. I think the future of this country, as far as the rights that most of the population take for granted, are in the hands of you young people. And I want to take my hat off to you. Thank you for doing what you did, because that protects all of us. Meg also, she did the same thing. She refused?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And do you all have lawyers?
We actually just got a lawyer. We're all going to be represented by one person. We're all being charged with the same thing, and we're all pretty much in solidarity with our stance. So,
Will?
We were given court-appointed lawyers, of which mine has really been the only useful one, and I thank Mr. James Cole for that. He has researched past instances of vending and things like that for me. I know both the lawyers that Catherine and Meg were given seemed reclusive, difficult to get a hold of, really unhelpful. So.
Mm-hmm. And these are public defenders, quote-unquote?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Did anybody film this happening at all, do you know?
There were probably 20 cameras there.
Any of these on the internet, do you know?
Yeah, there's a video that Adam Kokesh put together that's gone around that actually has the footage of the officer telling us that we can give it away, but we can't sell it.
Okay. And besides that, is there anywhere else listeners can access this? Or should they just do a Google search or do a search on YouTube?
Yeah, definitely go to YouTube, and then Adam Kokesh's channel, and then also lemonadefreedom.com.
So where does the case stand now? Are you due back in court at all?
On Monday.
Yeah, we have a status hearing on Monday.
What's after this status hearing? What can happen? Do you have any idea? Did your public defenders tell you?
My public defender personally didn't give me any information.
Right.
But when I went to talk to several lawyers, I was actually given the names of several prominent activist lawyers that are very familiar with doing this sort of thing. And the lawyer that we ended up hiring, he's dealt with people who refuse to take urine tests before. I mean, I've talked to certain lawyers who have never even dealt with that before. And this guy is sort of used to that sort of thing. And what he was telling me was there could be a few different scenarios. One, the government prosecutor prosecutor could perhaps not even bring it up in court that we violated our terms of release, that would be pretty wonderful. Or if he did bring it up, then we would have an additional hearing on another day to decide what's going to happen to us with the contempt of court charge, or we would have a hearing right then and there. Or there's even the possibility where they could try to punish us until we comply. And in that situation, what would happen was we'd either be fined for every day that we do not comply or put in jail for every day that we comply. But what has happened in past cases is people have been put into jail for failure to comply to these things, but they simply won't comply. Like, no matter how long they're going to be in jail, it's not going to make them change their mind. So some people have been put into jail for up to 6 months on these sort of non-compliant issues. So what happened was the courts ruled that once they realize that you're not going to comply no matter how much you're fined or how much you're put in prison, they can't keep you in there once they realize that it's a lost cause.
Right now we're just waiting for Monday, right?
Exactly.
And anything could happen. And I'm glad you told me about that website, lemonadefreedom.com. Updates are on that website for listeners, right?
Yes.
Yes.
How are your parents handling all this? What's their view? What's their opinion about this? Are they standing in your corner? Are they saying, geez, why'd you have to do that? What's going on with them?
With mine, they like what I'm doing. They wish that someone else was doing it. They're afraid of me, quote, throwing my future away. But while I understand their concerns as parents, I'm of the opinion that if you don't stand up for your future and the future of your country and your children, then, well, you might not have one. So I think that, well, yes, I would rather not have a conviction on my record. I also find that my moral standing and ability to keep my head held high is more important than that. So I'm going to see this through and not capitulate.
Catherine?
Well, my mother and grandmother are concerned. My dad is proud of me. He thinks it's really awesome that I stick up for what I believe in. And, you know, like Will was saying, he would like this to not be happening. But I think that by now, I've done so many strange things with my life that they're sort of used to it by now. And they're sort of like, oh, this is what situation she's in now. But, yeah, my grandmother asked me, why can't you ever do anything easy? And then there is that concern that, you know, I might have a conviction on my record that it could potentially ruin my future, ruin my life. But I don't see how my life would be more ruined than if I didn't stick up for what I believe in and stick up for what's right and do the right thing, regardless of the consequences. Because, I mean, if I didn't do those things, then I don't really see that my life would be worth much anyway.
That's great. You guys are great. Thanks for doing what you're doing, because this benefits everybody. And there are a lot of people behind you.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you, guys. We'll talk to you on Monday. Best of luck.
All right, bye.
Okay, we're joined again by Catherine Dill and Will Duffield. How are you guys doing tonight?
Wonderful.
I'm doing very well.
Okay, the last time we spoke, which was last week, we went over the whole case, and we decided that we would speak again after Monday the 24th, when you were going to have your status hearing, and you had the status hearing. So let's start from, I guess, where we left off. We spoke last week, and did anything happen prior to the status hearing?
Well, we found a lawyer, so that was nice, and that was about the only thing that we did before the actual status hearing.
Okay, so in other words, a lawyer other than your public defenders.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and how'd you find the lawyer?
Eddie Free gave me a few references for people who are sympathetic to activists. We actually talked to tons of lawyers, like really good constitutional lawyers, a few that have even pleaded cases in front of the Supreme Court, or like at least appealed cases to the Supreme Court. So it was very interesting getting so many people's input. And then we finally ended up with Jeff Light because he really supported us, basically what we were doing, and he found it very interesting. So he took the case, and that was nice because there were a few lawyers that I talked to that would try to tell us that it would be easier to take a urinalysis and whatnot, or they thought that maybe our tone was offensive or whatever. So, I mean, there are a few lawyers that just would not have been willing to give us a discount or help us out a little bit just because they had ideological differences.
Right. They liked limes. They didn't like lemons, I guess. Something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, they were offended by the lemons.
Yeah. And what was this guy's... God. What was this guy's name?
Jeff Light. He's an attorney in D.C.
Okay. He's a sole practitioner?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So he actually didn't really represent you for very long. It ended pretty quickly, right?
Yeah, he represented us for about 5 seconds.
Yeah. I was actually approached by my public defender, my previous one, mine being the only one who was actually helpful, right, when we were waiting to go into the courtroom, and he told me that he thought that the government was going to drop the case, and it turned out that he was correct.
I guess they must have tipped him off, right? Otherwise, how would
you
know? You get there what time in the morning?
I got there at 8. There were a few people who came out to support.
Yeah, that was really nice. There were definitely several people out there just in support of us. But even before the status hearing, I mean, our lawyer had made up a brief to dismiss the charges against us based on them being unconstitutional. So, I mean, like, we went in there prepared to fight. Like,
we were ready for a fight, and we were let go.
Did you have your Lemonade Liberation t-shirts on? How were you dressed?
We did one better. We all wore yellow, but fancy.
That's great.
It was,
you guys are just
so
great.
Yes, to some extent we dressed up, but we kept it with a nice lemon theme.
Exactly.
That's good. That's excellent. So you came in there. Do you think perhaps the judge noticed the lemon theme, or do you think it went over the judge's head?
Maybe he thought that we were like, I don't know, some sort of group that their color is yellow.
The judge was a lot more friendly than the last one.
Right. I did read that in the article. The Daily Caller, all charges dropped against Lemonade protesters. And what happened?
At first, we went down into the cafeteria, and we waited there for a bit for the lawyer we'd hired. He was unfortunately a bit late, but made it before our court appearance. My court-assigned lawyer came by because he had some research that he'd done that he wanted to hand over to our new lawyer. And when he stopped by, he told me that he had heard that the charges against me were being dropped, and he assumed against the girls as well, but he wasn't sure because he had just been my lawyer. So that gave us a lot of hope, and we ventured upstairs and met up with our lawyer and went over to the courtroom, waiting in there. Then there were a few cases viewed before us, but then we were finally all called up, first just me, but then when the judge realized it was a co-defendant case, then Meg and Catherine were called up as well, and the prosecution dropped all of the charges, and at that point we were free to go.
I don't know about Will and Meg, but I personally was not expecting the charges to just be dropped at the status hearing at all. I mean, there were so many possibilities of things that could have happened, and I just wasn't expecting that at that point
right.
at all.
How about you, Will?
Pretty much the same with me as far as that. We really thought that we were going in there and we were going to face a fight, and it really turned out far better.
I wonder why they just dropped it like that. Do you have any idea why they did? Was it because there was press and it was making them look even more of a joke than they actually are?
I think it would have been so detrimental to them because we had grounds for everything that we were saying. Them setting a precedent that someone has to give a urinalysis simply because they're going through the court system is just so blatantly unconstitutional. And if for whatever reason that protocol had to be removed or brought into question, they would lose so much money because, I mean, just think about how many people they can get extra charges on. And then plus, if drugs are found in your system, when you go in for the drug test as condition of release, you have to pay for whatever treatment it is that you're required to go to. And not only that, but travel to get there and travel to get there for the testing and everything else. It's insane what they put people through. I think it all came down to money. It's pretty obvious that we're not dangerous people. We were there for selling lemonade, and it just would have been such a costly ordeal, and we would have taken it to the very end. I mean, if it had come down to us having to sit in a jail cell until it went to trial, I'm pretty sure we all would have done it, and I think that they just could tell that we weren't going to let up, and they just figured that it was too much trouble for what it's worth.
Will, would you have gone to jail for this?
I would have. I mean, it certainly wouldn't have been my first choice, but I believe strongly enough in it and that citizens really shouldn't back down and should take things all the way through, take advantage of every aspect of the legal system that we have that's designed to protect them instead of just taking the plea deal and losing all of the steps that they have access to.
Right, exactly. And that's something pretty fascinating that you said earlier. I think, Catherine, you were talking about how you found out that the urinalysis, where they wanted to have you pee in a cup, that was clearly unconstitutional. It is clearly unconstitutional. They should probably know this, right? The judge should know this. Why do you think it is they are still attempting to have people pee in a cup, even though it's unconstitutional? What's the problem?
I think a lot of it has to do with money. There are a lot of people who make money from all of those urine tests, and even more if it comes up positive. And in our case, one of the reasons that they dropped it may have been because we were threatening that cash cow, and they didn't want that to be brought to court and proven to be wrong.
But it's unconstitutional, right? I mean, they really should not be doing that.
But nobody ever questions it. I mean, we had probably 10 people going up before us who, just like us, there were probably 3 or 4 of the cases that went up before us that had nothing to do with drugs whatsoever, and they were asked as well to give urine samples as part of their release, and everyone in front of us was just like, oh, okay. They just don't think about it, I guess.
Right.
Even though it's unconstitutional, it's not like something that anyone seems to care about.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it right. really doesn't. If you're someone who like sits there and thinks about liberty and the Constitution all the right. time, like us three, of course it's going to seem absurd to us, but I mean, I think that these people, they just literally don't care.
Yeah, most people just go through whatever motions they have to if they feel it'll get them out of there faster.
All charges dropped against Lemonade protesters. And I like this article by the Daily Caller. It says, the Lemonade 3 are free. The Superior Court of the District of Columbia dropped all charges Monday against 3 activists arrested in August for selling 10-cent cups of lemonade on the lawn of Capitol Building. And that was, of course, August 20th. And that was National Lemonade Freedom Day, a nationwide protest formed in response to a recent rash of children's lemonade stands being shut down by police. My God. Duffield, McLean, and Dill pleaded not guilty on October 4th to sale of goods on U.S. Capitol grounds, a crime that carries a maximum prison sentence of 180 days. Vending on the lawns of the Capitol is not allowed. The three faced an additional 180 days in jail after being held in contempt of court for refusing to submit to a urine test for drugs. And, of course, we went through that whole thing. And then you're saying here it wasn't a violent crime. There were no victims except all the thirsty people at the Capitol who couldn't get lemonade because we were arrested. That was great. That was very clever. When the three appeared at court Monday, there was a new judge who McLean described as jolly and friendly. The judge announced the charges against them had been dropped. It was very relieving, Dill said. I would have probably have lost my job, and Megan and Will don't even live close to the area. The judge did not say why the charges had been dropped. That was nice of him. Would have been nice to say, well, we brought you here because of this, this, and this, and we're letting you go because of this, this, and this. But no, the judge doesn't have to say anything. So the judge didn't say why the charges had been dropped, but Dill and McLean speculated it would have been not only costly but embarrassing to take the three to a full jury trial. The three had also been banned from the Capitol grounds. We talked about that too, but that too has been lifted. The first thing the three did after leaving court was take a picture in front of the Capitol building. I think I saw that picture. Is that you guys jumping in the air?
Yeah.
Great. And this is my favorite line from the whole article, and it's the last line in the article. McLean said the three have no plans at the moment for future protests, but, quote, the next time we see some innocent person being oppressed, we'll be there. That is such a great line because it almost sounds like a line from like a superhero, doesn't it?
It does, but it really is true. These things just tend to happen organically. Like we live in an era where you can see a problem, and with social networking and cell phones and the instant messaging that we have to be able to communicate to a larger group of people instantaneously, once a problem is noticed, we can mobilize groups to go out and fix it.
Yeah, you can act pretty quickly.
Flash mob.
Exactly.
No, this is great. I'm very happy that it turned out the way that it did, although I would have been just as happy if they went after you, because I know that you would have stuck to your guns. Even though I asked you earlier, I know you would have. I could tell from when we spoke before. You guys are my heroes for what you did. You really are. And there's a lot of people who feel the same way, because you did what I didn't do and they didn't do, but we would want to do. You did something great. Catherine Dill, Will Duffield, and the missing Meg McLean. Again, I want to thank you for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And thanks for what you did. And best of luck to you, and talk to you in the future.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Our pleasure.